Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the NXT 2.0 review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamplett from What Culture's look back on last night's episode of NXT 2.0. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT 2.0, but also Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamplett to review NXT 2.0. Michael Sidgwick, sadly feeling a bit under the weather today because he's working so bloody hard on his brilliant AEW book, which you can pre-order now, whatculture.bigcartel.com. You can also order that as part of the Sidgwick bundle with his book all about NXT as well there too. But Hamplett, we are here to talk NXT 2.0, and well, we speculated on the preview yesterday in the only slight bit of professionalism that we had in there, that this was going to be the first step on the road to War Games, and we weren't wrong.
Yeah, well, which is good, because we were wrong about just about everything else. Yeah, if, you know, 120,000 words on becoming all elite aren't enough, we can now sort of finally see becoming NXT 2.0, because this episode, more than any other that I can remember in the short run of this show, felt like there was as clear a distinction and direction as ever, maybe, about what this brand was. And that is to say that the pilot made it explicitly clear what NXT 2.0 was. It was this gimmick production line. It was this wrestler factory. It was this kind of reimagining and reshaping of the outward vision of the performance center that we always had. We always felt that we got to know the, I guess, like the order of things in the performance center, how long you would go from that property of the WWE Performance Center t-shirt through to when we could expect to see you on television, through to when we could expect to see you on TakeOver, and then inevitably when you'd be lifted and taken for the main roster forever, like the green aliens in Toy Story. it wasn't always that way, but I would say maybe 7 or 8 times of 10, you saw that run. 2.0 is reshaping that and shifting its mentality entirely. And I guess there's probably no better way to draw that. I was going to say thick black line, but I guess it should be a thick neon line. There's probably no better way to draw that neon line than at the War Games pay-per-view. There was stuff set up on this show, which is very broad and very sort of, they're spoon feeding their audience a little bit, not on a silver spoon, because silver spoons are classless, but they're spoon feeding their audience a little bit about where all this is going. I shouldn't distance myself from it. I'm part of that audience, their audience, those people over there that I'm looking down on from upon my hill. But yeah, more so than Halloween Havoc, more so than kind of some of the other big episodes with some of the big matches or the title changes, whatever, the direction for War Games is now explicitly clear. 2.0 pretty much starts there for real. For better or worse, I'm not saying you have to like what's going to come of it, but that absolutely feels like the start.
Yeah, I have to say, I quite enjoyed this show, the more I think about it. There was some decent wrestling on there, brief flashes though it was. And like you say, they built towards a pay-per-view, not a takeover, but a pay-per-view nonetheless for NXT, that I thought at the end of it, when I was discussing it on the news with Andy this morning, I sort of stumbled into quite a decent card here. I mean, I'm terrified for the what, 16 people involved in war games, because some of them have a lot more experience in this than others. And oh, good God, we're getting one of those ladder advantage things happening next week on NXT 2.0, of course. But as preposterous as some of the developments were, yeah, it's one that will live longer in the memory than, I don't know, last week's NXT, for example, that I literally can't remember a second of, other than Tony won and then they tried to kill Dexter Lumis. Anyway, let's start right at the beginning of the show, because they hadn't even got through the old opening video package before Grayson Waller was yelling on the microphone saying, no one wants to see this. He said, look, there's the big, you know, video wall of the legend of WWE. And yeah, Ciampa's not in it, despite being one of the greatest NXT champions of all time, because he's not larger than life or a superstar like Grayson Waller. And he says, don't boo me. You're the ones who booed Cena out of WWE. Now he's killing it in Hollywood. They did the same with The Rock. And don't get him started on Roman Reigns, who headlined WrestleMania after WrestleMania, but still got booed. He's killing it too. So Waller's realized that the fans don't matter. Superstars do. He was soon interrupted by Tommaso Ciampa, who he was set for a match with. But what did you make of this? An interesting mix-up, rather than having the show come out in an opening promo, just yelling over the opening titles, basically, instead.
I guess if you wanted to be kind, you could say that they were trying to achieve something different with this Grayson Waller promo. Just achieving something different with Grayson Waller is a weekly occurrence, isn't it? This is yet another string to it. I didn't get this. I don't like that WWE tie themselves in so many knots with their promos that you're able to point out the hypocrisies and like have a pick at the plot holes the very next day. We've just had this with Becky Lynch on Raw. What is Grayson Waller talking about here? What platform is he standing on? Does he hate the veterans, the legends, or does he hate the fans for chasing the legends away? If he had so much reverence, I understand the idea that like he has reverence for icons and he doesn't consider Tommaso Ciampa one of them. But that's the broader point, isn't it? Is that he is saying that he doesn't consider Tommaso Ciampa an icon. So if he replaces Tommaso Ciampa, who exactly is he replacing? Do you know, like if he takes down Tommaso Ciampa, it's like, well, yeah, but you just told me that you don't think Ciampa's on Cena and Roman Reigns' level. So who exactly is it that you're like tackling here? And the fact that he was setting himself up to be beaten by him too. Boilerplate stuff. WWE is so used to writing this copy that they don't realize how hypocritical and stupid it is. So they just send people out there to say it, regardless of the fact that it no longer makes any sense. And even some of the fans are sort of programmed to hear the keywords. They're not listening to the content. They're hearing the keywords. Like we always joke about, you people, each and every one of you. And that's like this sort of switch. But it's not a full-throated, enthusiastic, bilious hatred. It's just, oh yeah, this is my bit, isn't it? Boo. Shut up. It's just, I'm not sure what my favorite Grayson Waller gimmick is, but curious Raw host, I don't think is my favorite.
Well, the match soon got started with Tommaso Ciampa beating the piss out of Grayson Waller for bad mouthing legends. Basically, Waller slapped him at one point, not a good idea, beat him down in the corner, stomped on him. I thought for a split second, oh God. Please don't do that thing where he gets DQ'd for kicking too much ass. Waller did eventually get some offense in, though. He cut him off, hit a couple of neck breakers. He even did a sort of homage to the people's elbow, which popped me, especially when Ciampa moved out of the way and mowed him down with lariats instead. Ciampa takes him to the outside, beats him up around there, throws him over the announce desk. And as we come back from the break, Ciampa fires up. He's been beaten down during the commercial break, but Ciampa's back and they smash into each other, double down, another double down after a jumping knee strike from Ciampa, who also hit a sort of middle rope air raid crash, which I thought looked great and was incredibly surprised when Grayson Waller kicked out of it. And he fought back a rolling fireman's carry slam and he went off the middle rope with a Randy Savage elbow drop, dived through the over the ropes, I should say, onto Ciampa. But as he's following all that up, he gets caught with the Willow's belt and Ciampa hits the fairy tale ending. 1, 2, 3, like you say, a very sort of bog standard setup of boo this man, and then the champ's going to beat him, and we'll see more of these two together, well, in, what, a week on Sunday, effectively.
Yeah, I liked this match more in the context of the wider story that it was telling for War Games more than I did the match itself. It probably ran a little bit longer than it needed to. Grayson Waller, I should say, is probably better than the relatively low bar in terms of green wrestlers set on NXT. And he showed something here, but I still think it went a little bit too long as though to expose him a little bit. He started to look a little bit out of his depth towards the end. The people's elbow thing was interesting because, again, if this is him paying his respects to the legends, it really undermines everybody who's fighting NXT 2.0. If that is genuinely one of his new gimmicks, then so everybody on here sucks. Like, there's absolutely nobody in the Rock's orbit or John Cena's orbit or Roman Reigns. And we know that. You can't say it as explicitly as that when you're building up to a match against the best of NXT's best, you know. But I did ultimately like this as a device for getting us to where we were with the main event. Tommaso Ciampa comes out early, acts like a champion, acts like a leader, beats one of this new breed unleashed ahead of what we get in the main event segment.
Post-match, LA Knight is backstage. He's asked about what's just gone down, and he said, well, I could have gone out and cost Grayson Waller the match, but I knew he was going to lose, so I didn't want to give him that satisfaction. Waller sucks. That's just a fact of life. And then in comes Joe Gacy, who says, these facts are destructive and we should try and build each other up. And us, East Space is out ring and it's always open. And LA Knight goes, why do you have to make everything so bloody creepy? Which did pop me. And he says, I'll beat your ass instead of beating Grayson Waller up. So we've got a match set up for later on. We'll get your thoughts more on Joe Gacy's weirdness a little bit later, because we then had Toxic Attraction walking through the back. They're met by Crazy Dakota Kai. God, I hate this new character development for her. She deserves so much better. And then they walk past an area that's been smashed up and they go, looks like someone's been in their own personal rage room here. Who could that be? It's Kaylee Ray, because she's been doing the rage gimmick, hasn't she?
Yeah.
It's Kaylee Ray. And subtlety. That's what I like about my NXT.
So we've got Kaylee Ray and, let's be honest, Dakota Kai, that have both got kind of uncontrollable a frenzy about them, be it anger, be it other emotions. They just cannot control their emotions, Wilborn, these bloody women. And then you've got Toxic Attraction and somebody else that we're going to talk about later on that are just, you know, bitches, God, women make me so mad. And then you've got Cora Jade is somebody that is there. She could just be your best mate. Some women, they're just your best friend. It's almost as if the four old dudes that book this show are trying to project something. I can't quite see what it is. It's almost like they've got a hatred for a certain portion of society, quite a big portion of society, quite a well-represented portion of society. It's almost like they've got a real impotent hatred of a certain society. And I can't unpick this puzzle. I can't put the pieces together of why all those characters that I've just listed, what there's like a common denominator about these characters that I've just listed. But I cannot understand why these dated, hideous stereotypes have been applied to these particular characters. It's an interesting one that we'll have to try and figure out as NXT rolls on. We should try and investigate this a little deeper, I think.
This is the thing, because NXT is so bloody schizophrenic, because you have that, all that bollocks with Gacy and then the women backstage. And then you have what came next, which I thought was spectacular.
Yeah.
Kevin Brown, baby, to the moon. It's the best thing about this goddamn show. I've been saying it for years now. He comes out, he's got his beard sort of trimmed. It's not, you know, completely butchered, but obviously bits of it got chopped off by G. Bloody Hansen, along with bits of his hair last week. He's still got the long hair, but his beard's not tidied up, basically. And he's incredibly emotional. He cuts this excellent promo. He talks about growing up in a small town in North Carolina, getting bullied, being told he's not good enough. And then he showed everyone how he was good enough. And he shows now that he holds it down, and he got rich off the back of it. But he kept his long hair and his long beard to remind himself of the times when he was sleeping on a concrete floor, when he had nothing. And he said Duke Hudson, he took all that away from him. He humiliated and he embarrassed him. But worst of all, he made him angry. Hudson appears on the Tron after being called out by Grimes and says, oh, don't bloody recognize you, mate. He says, I don't know why you're angry, actually. I gave you my money, you took money from me, and you got a free haircut. And now you look like a human being and not a troll under a bridge. And again, Grimes calls him out and says, come out, let's settle this. And he says, right, well, after Duke again refuses, I gave you a chance to show how big your bowels are, but you've proved your, I love this line, gutless and nutless. And he says, tell you what, let's go all in, Duke. Hair versus hair at NXT War Games. And Hudson responds by saying, yeah, I wouldn't mind taking a bit more off the top. You're on. I'm going to take the rest. And he holds up a bag of Grimes' hair with, he carries that round with him and says, yes, yeah, see you at War Games, basically. This was phenomenal, Hamflet.
Yeah, I really like this. No jokes, no pissing about. Cameron Grimes, pretty much from the very beginning, has walked the neon tightrope on NXT 2.0, being a character from the old world that is able to be malleable enough to fit and blend into the new one. And we've kind of always, I like to think at least, we've always acknowledged that he was an outlier in the old world. As a result, he was too colourful for the dank of the CWC. He was one of those kind of, him and the likes of Ever-Rise at the time were sort of shining lights in this dark tunnel of a show. And it's no surprise that he's been able to shine on this one. His in-ring has always been good to great. His character is something that he just knows so well. And the difference between, it's an old idiom, I didn't make this up, but it's an old idiom that feels more relevant to NXT 2.0 than possibly any wrestling show I can think of. Gimmicks sell t-shirts, characters sell tickets. What is happening on NXT every week is that a gimmick is being supplanted on a wrestler. A wrestler is a rich tennis player that we'll, you know, talk about later on. Wrestler is a, who else have we got on this show? A card player, I guess, in the form of Cameron Grimes' opponent. They're just, it's a gimmick factory. It was to the point where we could make a joke about it. A Watch Your Thing production line of these bizarre, a mafioso, bizarre 100% gimmick slapped on somebody like a phone cover. Cameron Grimes happens to be a bit of a hillbilly. He happens to have come in with some money. But these are characteristics that make up who he is. They are not just sandwich boards that he has to wear out to the ring every week, you know. And this is the benefit of a character like his, is you get a promo like this. You get backstory that helps just colour in a little bit of this character that you already knew the details of. You already knew that he was this hillbilly kid from this tiny town in North Carolina, but now we know a little bit more that'll bring in. We already knew that he'd struck it lucky and gotten rich, but this ties together the fact of what being rich actually meant to him, because they're kind of realistic qualities that have been applied to a person rather than just daft, ridiculous character traits or a job. That's the thing. Half of these wrestlers aren't wrestlers. They do another job. Wrestling appears to be something that they're moonlighting in. Tony D'Angelo is here to make some money. He's come at the wrong place. Just stick with the family business, Tony. Like, this is different. Duke Hudson is not that. Duke Hudson is a fucking poker player. That's ridiculous. Duke Hudson, a guy that wants to bring Cameron Grimes down a peg or two and cut his hair, those are characteristics. Huge difference between Duke Hudson, the poker player, and by the way, a terrible one, and a guy that wants to like take out his anger and his bitterness and his resentment on a Cameron Grimes. Huge difference between gimmicks and characters, and you've got two characters here, and now you've got stakes. Now you've got stakes in the form of the hair. There is reason for both men to want to fight. It's a battle of sincere pride. Hair, for all that this is a bit of a dated concept now, because people are either more than willing to go bald or in some cases invest in hair plugs. I don't know why they choose the latter over the former, but, you know, like live and let live, I suppose. But this is a bit of a throwback stake, but it's one that still lands in wrestling. Always has gravitas nonetheless. I don't know if the match can deliver on these promos and on this build, but this is legitimately good. I would expect to see this on AEW. And dare we even say they're doing a better job of a hair versus hair storyline than on AEW?
Without question. Yeah, without debate. Yeah. I thought this was really good off, you know, a surreal live poker showdown development that they had a while back. What do we always say, Michael Hanflett, as supporters of middling to bad, at the best of times, football teams? It's the hope that kills you. This lit a fire under me, and I thought, so you're telling me there's a chance this character could not only work in NXT 2.0, but by process of the fact that it's run by the same people, maybe, just maybe, he could get a US title run on the main roster. I don't want to get carried
I know what you're saying, aren't you? At the Survivor Series, I was saying, look, if you're not going to build a babyface, what's the point of this Roman Reigns heel character? We found our babyface.
Oh. Don't. Because I'll get carried away. But I'm really...
I could. It wouldn't matter. WWE won't. It's fine. Yeah.
Series of backstage stuff and promos here. Pete Dunne says it's too long since I've held a title. Bloody Gargano stood in my way too many times. keep saying Carmelo Hayes, you're the leader of the New Blood. Well, it's time for me to become North American champion. And Mackenzie Mitchell is chatting with Persia Prater and Indy Hartwell. Indy's asked about the state of Dexter Lumis after he got his hand broken. She says he's out for a month, but don't worry. Another member of the way, Johnny Gargano, he's going to take Carmelo's title off him. They've got a match against Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter coming up. And Persia says, look, I can beat both of them up single-handedly. I did it last week if you're not ready. And Indy says, no, I'm fine. In fact, I'm going to dedicate this match to my husband. And then, Michael Hanflett, we got Tiffany's epiphany.
I mean, it rhymes.
It cuts to a blonde, rich woman who we don't see the face of, playing tennis.
Yeah.
And she says, look, this first line hooked me straight away. Whoever said money can't buy happiness must have been poor.
Yeah.
She says, Daddy has paid for my tennis lessons since I was a little girl, and now I've got the best serve at the country club. Cut to her shanking a serve.
I think she's played tennis as much as Duke Hudson's played poker, because she didn't look very good. I am not sporty. I sit and talk about wrestling all day. That shouldn't come as a shock. As a child, I was half decent at tennis, you know? Half decent at tennis. Every now and then, I treat myself to a game of squash. But, like, when I was younger, certainly, I used to be all right at tennis. Played a couple of times for the school. Gave it up. PlayStations and crisps as a teenager. You know, gave everything up. Gave all my hopes and dreams up. Gave the prospect of ever having abs up. And tennis went the way with it. Stuck with snooker and darts, but never tennis. From my even very limited sort of abilities of playing tennis as a youngster and getting coached and form on a serve and that, I didn't bother with the basics to do with this. Is it too much to ask, do you think, of, you know, I'm not so big on actors going method. You know, when that audio came out of Christian Bale bollocking somebody on the set, I think it was for the Terminator film he was making. And I understand that, like, it's in our nature to kind of protect people in their arts and in their crafts. I was a bit like, oh, no, chill out. Like, I'm sure somebody hasn't intended to do the thing that whatever they've done. And I'm sure you'll be able to fix it again. And, you know, you haven't needed to lose 28 stone like you did for The Machinist. Or you haven't needed to smoke 50 fags or whatever it was that made you talk like what you did in Batman. Like, just take a breath and crack back. I didn't see you killing people or cutting people, you know, for American Psycho. I'm sure you'll be able to get through this. However, is there at least a certain level of professionalism that you should try and lock into character a little bit, as in maybe spend a few days on the tennis court performing at least one? Because Mr. Perfect, all those incredible vignettes, there were bloopers. We know that he didn't nail them 100 times out of 100. What we saw was him doing it, because otherwise he isn't that perfect, is he?
Yeah.
Keep the perfect on him. She could have shot this 20 times and they could have been like, you got one. Does this mean that was the best one? Because otherwise, why make her a tennis player? Why not say what you're actually good at, do that instead? She is to tennis what Cora Jade is to skateboards.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, sometimes when I hear about, like, ooh, Daniel Day-Lewis lived like Lincoln when he was filming Lincoln, and I was thinking, just pretend, Daniel. Just pretend. Yeah. Think, oh, what would it be like if I was living back then? There you go. What's
Adam Wilborn on acting. What would it be like? Got it. Right, I'll see you on set.
There's a reason why my acting career may have tapered off slightly. Hello, I'm Lincoln.
Have you ever wondered what it would have been like living in my times? It's me, Abe Lincoln from Leeds.
I'm Abe.Lincoln on Zoom. Wait a second, we haven't got that, have we yet?
Oh, let me charge my phone. Oh, I've done it again.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Because I've watched this again to obviously get the quote. And it was just, it was bad enough on double speed, on normal speed, tossing a ball up, then cutting then, that they can't even show her tossing a ball up and serving it. Someone has to chuck it up for her, and she goes, and then just hits it vaguely over the net. Yeah. Anyway, she continues. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth because, silver is tacky. Daddy said I'm ready to take over NXT, and he's never wrong. And we find out her full name is Tiffany Stratton, and she's unbearable.
Yeah. A couple of things here. When she was saying, I can't hear Daddy on a wrestling show anymore because it's too close to whenever you would call me or Sidgwick that in the office. Mm-hmm. Daddy, can I ask you a question, Daddy?
Yeah, a little note for the listeners. Yesterday, me and Hamlet went for lunch and audibly in the little sandwich shop, I went, Daddy, can I have a fruit juice?
Oh, God! I cannot take it anywhere. Forgot about that one. Daddy, can I have a fruit juice? Chills, man. It was a work day. That's my time. Not going for lunch with you anymore. That was a thing, but that's very much a personal one, a subjective one. Also, they were really weird about covering some of her face, considering that you saw her serving a tennis ball and then you could see like her lips and that. And because she's already wrestled on TV, search Tiffany Stratton 205 Live and she's worked a match. Like, go and have a look. Like, if you want, I checked it out. It's all very basic. I wouldn't expect, there might be a move that she's got in a locker that we're not seeing because there was nothing to get too excited. Like, full gimmick as well. This is not that sort of, hey, check out Tiffany Stratton when she was called Tiffany Smith. Like, she's out there, she cuts a promo on the fans in the NXT Dome, which is purple for 205 Live. She's in the tennis skirt. She's dressed very much like Keith Lee was on the main roster. And she wrestles a match, and that's your lot. So it's, I don't know why they were so secretive about that coming soon to NXT. But yeah, yet again, like, very strange, cliched traits about this character. And I just can't put my finger on why it is they're doing the things they're doing with her.
Exactly.
We should work out the common denominator of these specific stereotypes that they insist upon these people.
Well, it rolled on next because we got the tag match next. Indy Hartwell, Persia Perotta versus Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter, who had quite the entrance through the crowd.
I was waiting for your reaction to this because I knew this was your first look at it.
It's something, isn't it?
We are not young people, Wilborn. You have to remember that.
Honestly, I was thinking about this earlier, about how many new things I'm confused by. Mm. Like, not just NFTs and Bitcoin, but like when someone says, like, catch me on Discord, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. It scares me. I don't understand any of this. But yes, they did their cool TikTok-y entrance through the crowd. And then, the story of this match, like, I love Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter as a wrestling tag team. I think they work so well in sync, and I think the stuff that they can do is jaw-dropping. We saw elements of that in here. But the story of this match, not to, you know, dismiss the wrestling, is Indy Hartwell just can't concentrate because she's thinking about Dexter Lumis. She's on the ring apron. She's not even noticing when Persia Perotta's reaching out to tag her in. When she's even in the ring, she's sort of distracted. She's not all there. And that played into the finish. Persia Perotta looked dominant in parts, but the numbers game caught up to her. The fact that Kanzaro and Carter were doing quick tags and double team maneuvers and what have you, whilst Indy Hartwell's off in her own little world thinking about, well, what's he going to do now? He can't use his hands because we do all the sex stuff. And yeah, Indy Hartwell eventually got isolated. Persia Perotta got knocked off the apron. And then they did that electric chair splash thing to give Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter the win, which for me is the right thing because I want to see them fighting for the tag title soon because I love them working together.
Yeah, NXT wrestler looks at hands isn't exactly a headline, is it? But Indy Hartwell staring at a ring finger, I suppose, was a unique way to try and tell this story. Oh, I don't know. I don't want to accuse you of being too kind here because Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro are realistically two of the only people that you could put against Toxic Attraction. If you want to stop the most dominant force in NXT, you've got one of the only other established teams, I guess. And presumably, this is to tell a side story with Indy Hartwell and Persia Perotta. So if I can be complimentary, what I will say, because I've certainly been, I don't know if anybody spotted this, but I've kind of like put in a bit of a subtle dig at how I think NXT treats women on the show. We'll have to wind it back to pick it up. But I guess I'm going to like offer some gentle praise here. They have effectively established new challenges for the tag titles and set up a spin-off story, you would assume, between Indy Hartwell and Persia Perotta, because Perotta literally got it done no bother by herself without Indy Hartwell around, then Hartwell dragged her down. Again, it's not very subtle. It's all very on the nose. You're having it spelled out for you. But that's all right. That's okay. The problem is, even when this show, I mean NXT 2.0, just to ever slightly differentiate from the main roster, even when this show is good, at best, it's functional. And unfortunately, just because you've got the functional drivers of a storyline, a lot of the wrestlers are so experienced that you're worried you can't really have the payoff at the end. Like Toxic Attraction, where other than the fact that they lost their first attempt to win the tag titles, were broadly dominant after that. They were put in a position where it kind of became untenable that Toxic Attraction wouldn't win the tag titles. But how did we arrive upon that? We arrived upon a series of matches where you looked at them not really appearing ready in matches. So one thing, like the left hand undermines the right a little bit. I have certain faith that the stories here will lead to where they're supposed to go. You would imagine perhaps Persia Perotta will turn on Indy Hartwell, or Persia Perotta will... she's not a formal member of the way, is she? No. So she instead will turn to another stable, but it probably won't be the Diamond Mine because they've got Ivy Nile, but you know what I mean? Like turn to another group and like look for support there because she was never a member of the way and Indy Hartwell's let down and fine. And Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro will challenge the tag titles and fine. But are you really that buzzed for the matches? It doesn't come with a certain expectation of the big, I was going to say takeover match, but the big pay-per-view payoff, because you're not really seeing the work as evidence as for like proof of concept.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, what followed was Andre Chase with his students. Always love him on this show. Giving them the tour of the performance center. He bumps into Cameron Grimes and says, "Oh, students, gather around. This is a lesson. Never make a decision you'll regret, or it'll cost you a match or even your hair." And Grimes tells him to go to hell and walks off. So hopefully he's getting a cave in next week.
That's it, isn't it? It's either they're building up your next opponent following a pay-per-view, or they're building up somebody that you can beat en route. And Andre Chase feels very much like a guy for Cameron Grimes to beat next week rather than after the fact.
Two of my favourite guys in NXT were facing against each
other. I was going to say they're giving the people what they want. They're not. They're giving you what you want. That's okay, because you talk about it, so that's all right.
Then we got a squash sort of return match for Santos Escobar. He battered Malik Blade. A tiny bit of offense in again, but it was the usual sort of formula here. Santos eventually takes control, exploded suplex into the bottom turnbuckle, double knees, phantom driver, 1, 2, 3. It was all about what happened afterwards, though. Post-match, the rest of Legado del Fantasma are there, and Electra Lopez gets on the mic and says, "No one says no to Legado del Fantasma. We offered Zion Quinn the opportunity of a lifetime, and he said no, and look what happened to him. But we never needed him anyway. Santos is back, and Legado is stronger than ever." Joaquin Wilde starts talking about the tag titles, but then here comes the best friends, not Chuck Taylor and Trent, but Kyle O'Reilly and Van Wagner, who says, "Hola, amigos." Kyle O'Reilly says they want to shot the tag team titles as well. And Wilde says, "We already beat you guys." And Van Wagner says, "Look at the tape, pal. My foot was on the ropes. We've got unfinished business, you dumbass." And then Imperium appear on what can only be described as William Regal's platform. They start talking in, I think, Italian, was it? Yeah. And then Marcel Bartel says, "Oh, Fabian, the people can't understand you. They're hicks. They're unintelligent. They don't understand second languages. And you two teams, well, you should be embarrassed of each other, fighting like children." He called Von Wagner Lurch, which I really liked. you think you deserve a shot? You think, Legado, you can defeat us? Well, none of us can stop you. You're just going to have to figure out amongst yourselves who gets the tag team title shot at War Games. It's going to be Wagner and Kyle O'Reilly, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, is it not within their wheelhouse to end this as a triple threat?
Yes.
Is there not the
whole sort it out amongst yourselves, though, implied number one contenders match next week was what I got from that, though.
Yeah, you're probably right. I wonder if NXT would dare not book a finish. I know that's a bit of a wild suggestion. That's probably the sort of prediction we should say for the preview, personally. But I don't know. I didn't get the impression that they would want to undermine Legado del Fantasma with the defeat here. Although I guess you're not undermining Santos Escobar, are you? Yeah. No. Typically, you're allowed for the underlings to take a loss. So maybe that's the main thing. They're trying to protect Escobar because you're going to
get... And they can Zion be protected Quinn. With like a Zion Quinn distraction of sorts.
Zion Quinn can run in and... Not that he'll distract Fantasma, of course. He'll distract Electra Lopez because she's just not been able to switch off those feelings that she's got. And it's going to be her getting distracted that costs Fantasma. Not the bloody men, it's the women. We'd have been fine if it wasn't for that bit of skirt we've got hanging around with us. Probably right. It's probably Von Wagner and Kyle O'Reilly. And it's probably Kyle O'Reilly getting pinned by Imperium at a War Games. He's going to look at that double cage and be like, "I used to be somebody.
Yeah,
I used to win those things, me."
I understand the triple threat idea, but there's more than enough people that those agents are going to have a lot of work on their hands next Sunday already. Let's not complicate things more with a triple threat tag team match.
There is this is another, I guess, for another podcast in more detail, but there is increasing speculation, as they're not, over what the nature of the Owen Hart Cup is going to be. And AEW are set to announce something for that soon. It seems unlikely that it will be a singles tournament because you've got the TBS one ongoing. However, a tag team one doesn't feel out the question, does it? Or a trios one wouldn't fill out the question either. Owen Hart, a man remembered fondly for his tag teams and for his stables, you wouldn't put out that question. And if only there was a slot where Kyle O'Reilly could fit into either a tag team or a trios act. I can't think of one. I'm asking that question to the listeners because I just can't think of anywhere where Kyle O'Reilly could fit into either a tag team or a trio in AEW. Because if that was hypothetically the theme of the Owen Hart Cup, Kyle O'Reilly should be looking for partners. I was going to say 2.0, but they've got Daniel Garcia. I was going to say the best friends, but they've just been added to Chaos. There's loads of them. I kind of place it. Probably not best for them. What I'm saying is Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner will probably win their tag titles to pay off their 20-year-long friendship. The boyhood dreams have come true for Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner.
Those 12-ounce curls have paid off. Right, before we got Cora Jade versus the NXT Women's Champion and Mandy Rose, there was a bit backstage with the women arguing. Yeah, sure, right. Zoe Stark and Raquel Gonzalez kick it off for no apparent reason.
Just be mates. You're about to enter a double cage match and you don't even dislike each other in the first place. Just be friends.
So Cora Jade comes in and goes, oh, are you really doing this can they coexist thing? It's so boring. It's so outdated. And I go, yes. Listen to what you're saying, WWE. And Cora Jade goes, and you're buggered, to Zoe Stark, basically. We need a fourth member. Who could that be? Anyway, I'm going to go and kick Mandy Rose's butt. But before we get to Mandy Rose's butt being kicked, it's time for Tony D'Angelo. He's there for this time to give his thoughts on tonight's show. And I think it's Mackenzie introduces him. And literally the first word of out of his mouth is, oh, he says, business is booming. Forget about it. He says, I got the numbers right here. The odds are all over the place. We got people betting on the humorless Paisan Johnny Gargano. And then we got the tea and crumpets Fugazi tough guy, Petey Poppins. He's got people betting on him too. But me, hey, my money's on the no t-shirt wearing Goomba Carmelo Hayes. He says, Mackenzie, you got some money you want to put down? Little inside tip. LTST coming here, ladies and gentlemen. Petey Poppins don't stand a chance. He says, you know, we could turn that 1-carat ring on your finger in a 2-carat ring. You follow? Just call my guy. Checks list of Soprano characters.
Unbelievable.
Hesh.
It's for us. That's not an accident at this point. It's a bit. The man's entire life and backstory has been turned into a bit. Like they are. That Soprano's Wikipedia page has got more updates at this point than the WWE personnel one.
He says, just call my guy Hesh. Put the bet in. Trust me. He says, thank you for your time. And she goes to hand it back. And he goes, hey, back to the Three Stooges at the desk.
So we've had poker for real in NXT. We've had the implication that Tony D'Angelo has got a guy Hesh. Now, you know where Hesh is going to lead, don't you? He's going to lead Tony D'Angelo all the way to AEW. He's going to ride in on Pio Mai and then call out Hangman Page for a match for the title. You think that's cowboy? I'll show you some cowboy shit. You should have seen him build my house. Hesh. Christ almighty. I almost admire that, you know. If that's come all the way back around to maybe being funny again, that they are exclusively dealing in Sopranos characters for his friends and family.
Just... and get over this.
Hesh. Yeah, I mean, for all that we've gone quite like ornate with the predictor, we really do just need to add pick your favourite Soprano's name this week.
Mike, do you know what
I think my
Tony D'Angelo predictor for War Games is what's my favourite spot in War Games history, Michael Hamflett?
Io Shirai putting a bin on her head and jumping onto everybody else.
So Tony D'Angelo's going to roll himself up in a rug and then jump off the top of the game.
That is good. That is good. He brings out a glass fishbowl with a fish in it and then smashes it over someone's head. Hey, you're sleeping where the fish is.
Oh, I'm so excited for him in War Games. I can't tell you. Anyway, right, we got Mandy Rose versus Cora Jade, non-title, mind you, which was quite lucky because Cora Jade, you know, Mandy Rose for the most part dominates. And then Cora fires up, hits a Rana, hits a charging knee in the corner, snapmare covers, gets a two count, goes up top. She comes off, Mandy moves and just takes control. Mandy she's got the match won. She's the NXT Women's Champion after all. But then in the midst of the match, out comes raging Kaylee Ray with a baseball bat. She twats the ring post. She twats, I think, one of the monitors or something at ringside. This distracts Mandy Rose. And Cora Jade, the skateboarder who can't skate on a board, pins the NXT Women's Champion.
A few thoughts on this. I'm going to give Cora Jade a bit of praise first, because we're sometimes on Cora Jade's case because she's not that experienced and it sometimes shows in her matches. And that's the fault of NXT for being a television show, I guess. She doesn't appear to be the most confident skateboarder, and yet they've slapped her on a skateboard. That's not on her particularly. And you know what I really liked in this? How good was Cora Jade's cover of Mandy Rose? She was moving constantly to try and like shift her body weight. This didn't look like a 24/7 roll up. She hooked her and then she rolled her body twice onto Mandy Rose's legs to try and apply pressure. I really appreciated the craft in that. And
one of my favorite like surprise roll up shock wins, which is Shelton Benjamin against Triple H all those years ago on Raw.
Indeed. Like it's that sort of, you've got to do everything you can because an opportunity has fallen in your lap and you've got to take it. And I worry that praise even sounds condescending because we've not had like some of the nicest thing to say about some of the more experienced wrestlers on this show. But I just thought that was more than your average. And I like seeing wrestlers shoot for a little bit more. I like seeing them maximize the minutes and all that sort of stuff. So I just want to like isolate a bit of praise for Cora Jade there, because the match otherwise wasn't really anything to write home about. It was just an NXT TV match. Kaylee Ray, right, is so brilliant that I will extend an awful amount of patience to whatever she's going to do on this show. This is a overdue and, let's be honest, late call-up for Kaylee Ray. She probably should have been in an original version of NXT back when the women were absolutely smashing it on takeovers. She probably now should already be getting buried on the main roster in matches that were devastating to watch. She's that far ahead of a lot of this crop. Are we supposed to be receiving her as a character that you can't trust, that the babyfaces have got to rely on? Or does this show hate women so much that she's just an out-and-out babyface? Like, I couldn't... From when she debuted, and I know they did that standoff with Toxic Attraction, but nothing about her screamed babyface.
No.
And now she's with these guys because she's crazy. She got a bet. Like, that's why she's with the babyfaces, because she's there to make up the numbers. She's got War Games experience. She was great in that War Games as well. A special guest. She was awesome in the 20, but as a heel, she was an awesome heel in the 2019 War Games. So I don't mind that she's in the match. I think it's beneficial to have more experienced wrestlers in there to hold it together. And you can't put this all on the shoulders of an Io Shirai or generously a Mandy Rose. So the more experienced wrestlers you've got in there, the better. And Kaylee Ray can absolutely handle herself and then some in this match. But I don't... How am I supposed to read this? Is it like the babyfaces have got no choice? Or genuinely, do they think that she is exhibiting heroic qualities, is going to win the match for the faces to set up Kaylee Ray versus Mandy Rose as the next big title program? I can't work out what I'm supposed to be looking at here.
No, me neither. But after the break, as Jade celebrated with her teammates, Kaylee Ray came in and went, "I'm the fourth member of the team. And by the way, are we taking on the ladder match to determine the War Games advantage next week?" So, I mean, I feel a little bit less scared about that, at least with her in there, and now her and Io Shirai in War Games proper, although they can't do any stuff with each other. But Dakota Kai's in there, so 3 out of 8 ain't bad, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, 3 of them.
Carmelo Hayes cuts a promo ahead of the main event, saying that the disrespect should have stopped last week. Gargano's been here 5 years. Like, that's a good thing. I've been here 5 months and I'm already a champion. Dunn said he's got 10 years more experience, but it's not about experience. This is the A show. He's the A champion. And when he shoots tonight, he won't miss. Joe Gacy's talking some more bollocks about making the ring a safe space. And Paul Bland puts his hand on his shoulder and Gacy does that weird head tilt smile thing. LA Knight makes his entrance for his match against Joe Gacy, but immediately gets jumped by Grayson Waller and they have this big pull apart brawl. So Gacy gets on the mic and says, "Oh, I'm sorry about that. I wish I could have shown LA Knight the error of my ways. That wasn't meant to be. I'm here to talk about how to fix." Thank God, here comes Diamond Mine. Malcolm Bivens says, "You stole us the spotlight from us last week, so we're doing the same tonight. Take your thesaurusing ass out of the ring because Ivy Nile's got a match." And Gacy says, hey, I respect that, but I don't have respect for Roderick Strong. His name alone is an example of toxic masculinity. And the Cruiserweight Championship, that's an example of weight shaming. It triggers those of a certain body type. It's meant to divide. Strong just could not give a toss. He wants to kick the crap out of this bloke. He says, "Whatever you say, yeah, fine. I don't fear you. I'm not scared of you. I'm not scared of any weight limit. Look, my next money match is standing here. Bivens, make it happen." And Malcolm Bivens says, "I'm going to dot the T's and cross the I's for a match between you two at War Games." And Gacy says, "Thank you. I look forward to resolving this issue." And Bivens tells the Creeds to take out the garbage. But suddenly, Harland appears and they go, "Oh, maybe next time." Thoughts on all this?
God, stop saying things you don't understand, WWE. Stop it. There is a Wikipedia page, presumably, for young contemporary terms and the way people speak that they are also visiting when they finish finding the Sopranos character name, just to feed Joe Gacy this alphabet soup of terminology that they do not know how to apply in context, and it is f***ing infuriating. A £205 weight limit for a division is not weight shaming. You have just tried to put terms together that you think make sense. I f***ing hate it. Roderick Strong, the name, is not an example of toxic masculinity. And belts do divide people into winners and losers because it's a fucking wrestling show. What are you doing here if you don't want to divide people into winners and losers, Joe Gacy? God damn this stupid gimmick that possibly intentionally, I don't know, mocks everything that it espouses to be. It's rancid garbage, this thing. And I don't want to be somebody getting worked up about something that everybody else was already bored of 6 to 8 weeks ago, but it was just the way it was showcased here I found particularly galling. Not least because, who the hell's the babyface? Diamond Mine are a bunch of heels, this much we know, through every clue that we get about these characters. But then they come out in, like, far greater numbers than Joe Gacy, a bunch of bullies, effectively, and, like, shut this heel down with the challenge that then, because of Harland, they kind of back away from. So they're cowards too. Like, I don't know who anybody is in this feud. And you know who else I don't know who anybody is? Odyssey Jones, Jacket Time. Who are they? Because they're nowhere near the Cruiserweight title or the feuds they've been having for the last month at this point. We've got Joe Gacy versus Roderick Strong, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure kicked off as Joe Gacy kind of trying to audition himself to join the stable last week.
Yeah.
And they
took a card, didn't
that
they?
Slightly. Aye. Like, this was... I cannot sanction this. Now I said sanction. Maybe WWE could write it down and have Joe Gacy say it next week and misuse it. Just too illogical, too stupid. Joe Gacy versus Roderick Strong is not a particularly attractive pairing, in my opinion, but at least that's the wrestling match element of this. All of this was fluff and nonsense.
£245, Joe Gacy is billed out on Wikipedia. Yeah. Hey, actually, I've changed my mind on him. He's born on August the 8th. Be all right.
Illogical trash.
So is this a way for him to lose to Roderick Strong and then Odyssey Jones go, "Well, if there's no bloody weight limits..."
Yeah, probably. No, like, you're joking. Probably. If that's what we're doing here, then yeah. And then Joe Gacy and Harland can patronize the Creed brothers by saying, we tried to make this a safe space, but you've been making this incredibly dangerous to people. And he's like, yeah, because we're fucking wrestlers, Joe. It's a wrestling ring.
Right. Another going to get to the fireworks factory segment from MSK this time. They're driving.
I don't know about fireworks factory because I think they've been blazing it, Wilbon.
There he So they've tried to get a bus, which they missed and then walked. They were on a plane. I think there might have been a week that I missed that maybe something else happened. Planes, trains, and automobiles, basically. They're driving now to find this shaman. And they're all a bit paranoid in the car. And Lee tells Carl, hey, slow down. You don't want to attract any attention. And then they get the blues and twos, the flashing lights behind them, and they toss this mysterious bag that's full of weed, but they can't say it's full of weed, so they have to say it's substances or a mystery thing that would be very bad for the authorities to discover about. And Carter rolls down the window, and one of them says, hello, Ossifer.
Jesus Christ.
The policeman says, do you know how fast were you going? Do you know how fast you can drive around here? And they go, oh, I don't know, 35, 40. And he says, 7. You know, 7 miles an hour. They talk, they're out of the car. They've been asked to reveal what's in the package. And they say, oh, I can't go to jail. I'm too pretty to go to jail. And as they go to unzip the bag, car comes past. Fast and the Furious style, and the police says, well, you're lucky this time. I'll let you off with a warning. I've got to go and catch some real criminals. And Carter says, he's watching over them, and they head off. MSK almost busted, Hamlet.
I refuse to descend into madness over this. Otherwise, it'd just be reefer madness, wouldn't it? Them two and the jazz cigarettes. I know, I'm just like all you other young people. I know what it is. I know it's because they didn't have enough sleep. That was why they were overtired, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They were staying up too late studying wrestling matches. I remember when I was their age and I was young and tired, and I can only assume that it's because they were watching wrestling tapes so that one day they could know more than is necessary about WWE's history.
Watching That's wrestling for 4 hours and 20 minutes? What's all this about?
Was this like a rib on top of some LTST? Because were they playing the roles of Rob Van Dam and Sabu when he won the WWE title? Like, MSK, when this relaunch started, were one of the few acts that at least resembled what this looked like aesthetically. They defended the tag titles, lost them, and haven't wrestled since. Like, these were the ones that were supposed to fit the show.
We were sat here going, right, yeah, change everything else if you want to do that. Introduce all these weird new characters and bright colours. But you have genuinely, not to be too hyperbolic, a legacy feud here. MSK and the Grizzled Young Veterans. Polar opposites, yep, who've already pulled out a arguably match of the year candidate and can easily do so again. And now I'm just there going, look what they've done to my boys.
I hope this shaman can save them. I hope he's got like some 5-star advice for them, because I just my hopes aren't high right now, Wilbon.
I just hope RVD's missus shows up, because I was vaguely aware about her and, you know, Impact and what have you.
Yeah,
you already introduced me to her properly yesterday, and I got lost on her Instagram page for about half an hour, if I'm perfectly honest. Couldn't look away. For good and bad reasons. Anyway, one other thing I couldn't look away from was Ivy Nile, who dominated, wrecked. I think Ulyssa Leon was the name of her. I love Ivy Nile incorporating push-ups and sit-ups into
yes!
her kicking. And then she just put her in a sleeper, like a front guillotine, effectively. And also, prior to that, took an head off with a lariat. More Ivy Nile on my television.
Well, yes, but this exact amount of Ivy Nile.
Yes.
These are when squashes are great. You get about like 2 minutes of her. You get this cool character stuff like the push-ups and the flexing and all that kind of stuff. And we've seen, what, 3 of these or 2 of them? Either way, they're super effective. you get who this character is and let it stay around the 2 minute mark rather than racing to 10, 11, like we got with B-Fab and Electra Lopez, because I actually get to feel something for a wrestling character on NXT 2.0.
I'm annoyed that they didn't do, I know she was part of Diamond Mine, so it probably wouldn't work, but I'm annoyed for once that they genuinely didn't do vignettes. Put Ivy Nile in a bar and someone comes up and goes, "Hey, Toots, you're coming on with me tonight." And she glasses him like in the bar and smashes his head off the bar. Because she could handle herself. I think she's just fantastic in these sort of shows.
Well, I mean, to be fair, she's probably got to put up with that on NXT 2.0 anyway, the way that they're all absolutely in just sex-obsessed bunch of jocks and weirdos. Like, there's we're probably seeing shoot versions of that at the Performance Center Juice Bar.
Right, we had a series of things. One of them I'm desperate to talk to you about, one of them less so. My poor boys, the Grizzled Young Veterans, they bump into a guy backstage and steal his wallet. But it's all
over Shannon. Look at you pretending it's not a legacy feud. They're both going to get in trouble with the police.
Yeah. Put them in the same cell.
Yeah, there you go. That's how it all kicks off again. Hell in a prison cell.
And then whilst they're doing that, by the way, they walk off and LA Knight and Grayson Waller are still just fighting through backstage. Solo Sikoa says he doesn't care, he'll fight anyone, and he beats up a punch bag. And then Michael Hamflet, just when you thought it was safe, there was no fiend adjacent stuff going on in WWE. Walter is inhabited by the spirit of Mei Ying. She's passed on her strength and her spirit, but he's got no control over it. But once controlled, we will all fear him. And his face transforms and he blows smoke. Oh, I'm so excited for how they ruin this.
Well, I'll f*** the blob. Fiend's back.
We're getting Willow on the main roster. We're getting whatever this crap is in NXT.
I will answer your question with a question because you've described that so beautifully. What's worse for Boa? Like the prospect of this being dropped or the fact they've remembered it? Because that was weird the other week, but then it went. And you just thought, oh my God, imagine if they've done that to Boa and then they've dropped it. And then you watch this and you're like, oh my God, what have they done to Boa and they've kept it? I don't know. I tell you what I do know is that I was watching Survivor Series and we watched some of it together, and that elimination match was so boring and 30 minutes was too long and none of these characters are particularly over that I'm starting to think the best option for WrestleMania and the Royal Rumble winner, it's Bray Wyatt. And it's absolutely not absence making the heart grow fonder, but it is looking at this show and being like, well, there's nowhere else I want him to wrestle. That character is really stupid. And this wrestling show is really stupid. They belong together. Like, number 30. Bray, like, huge
the roof had come off the place.
People loved him, man. I knew I was an outlier. We were outliers on this podcast. Absolutely enormous pop. Out he comes. Sister Abigail's the last people in there. Like, he points, like, the WrestleMania sign suddenly, because it's a video screen now, has like locks and billboards on it. And he points, and you just hear him go, "Let me in." And then the locks and billboards all fall away, and the fireworks go off, and Bray's off to WrestleMania. Like, maybe as hideous and stupid and as contradictory as all this stuff is, Boa included, there's one place to do it. Isolate it to WWE. Isolate it to this ridiculous Disney Plus of a promotion and keep it out of wrestling elsewhere.
Then he can...
I tell you what it is, right? I've got a bit of anxiety at the moment. I didn't anticipate that AEW would run Winter Is Coming this year. It seemed really in keeping with last year's feud with Omega and Moxley. We knew there was a big special coming for the TBS shift in January. You didn't predict it. You didn't feel like, oh, Winter Is Coming was going to be this beach break type annual thing. And ever since I saw the graphic, I've had these anxiety sweats that we're going to see the logo on the night, Winter Is Coming, changed to Wyndham Is Coming. And much like how Sting debuted, this is going to be this big night for Bray. And I'm not against wrestlers getting jobs and all that. I just, some wrestlers fit in with the wrestling companies better than others. And I don't know.
Fiend can win the Rumble and then lose in under 5 minutes this time at WrestleMania.
Oh, that's it. He would even put him against, what am I saying? Fiend versus Roman Reigns.
You put a title on Randy.
I'm thinking like, oh Christ, yeah, brilliant. Do that. Put the belt on Randy and Randy can go 3-0 against Bray Wyatt. I was thinking he would be like Roman Reigns is always asking people to acknowledge him and Bray's always asking people to let him in. Acknowledge me, let me in. It's just people trying to get into a building. Acknowledge me, let me in.
You could have Randy Orton do a big smoke-filled entrance as well, because it's just Riddle just blazing it up backstage and blowing it out.
MSK running around.
Husker's the pig boy screws Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. Speaking of, just getting screwed. What the hell are they doing with the Grizzled Young Veterans? They're so goddamn good, and they lost to Briggs Jensen, Brooks Jingson, whatever they're pissing called. And they had the temerity to be like, yeah, enough of all this tag team wrestling. Let's cut backstage to a pointless brawl. Look, the GYV are so good. And I don't care if they do the same thing every match. I love seeing them go, oh, look over there, and then cheating, and it's sort of coming off for them. But what happened this time is Drake gets taken over after there's an avalanche in the corner, and he comes down bad on his knee, basically, and he sells it. And as the referee's, oh, I've got to check on him, wait a second. Zach Gibson goes for the cheap shot, and I'm thinking, great, here we go. Big finish here, and then you can set up GYV and being in and amongst the number one contenders. Maybe they even face and beat Kyle O'Reilly and Van Wagner if they win the titles at War Games. No, the stupid, pissing, boring, hillbilly, real beer fighting group just knock Zach Gibson off the apron, catch Drake, who's going for a kick, but I thought his knee was bad. And they hit that high-low combo, 1-2-3. My God, I hated this pamphlet.
Rubbish, man, rubbish. There's a reason why we take the piss out of these gimmicks, these vignettes and skits that you get with the likes of the Grizzled Young Vets trying to learn how to be more effective cheats, or Duke Hudson playing poker, or Joe Gacy not understanding what his gimmick even is. It's because it never, or almost never, is justified by what happens in the ring. And the ring, remember, is the place where they do their jobs. Every vignette, every characteristic, every gimmick fundamentally has to exist for the betterment of their wrestling careers. They are here to wrestle, to win matches, to win titles. When these things do not in any way connect to the other, then the gimmicks are completely rudderless and they're completely pointless. What are we watching the Grizzled Young Vets attempt to achieve with their hijinks and their theft and their skullduggery if they just lose matches to greenhorns anyway? This were a team that, and I don't need to tell you this, this were a team that had their hands on the belts on more than one occasion. They were within touching distance. They had them in NXT UK, if that was even a brand and existed, or a figment of all our imaginations, I can't be sure. But there was a rumour that they held titles for this mystery brand called NXT UK. And they were just a super effective tag team that they've decided that they've got rubbish. So they've decided that because they're rubbish, they're having to learn all these tricks and hijinks and appear in Peter Sellers' Pink Panther skits. And then they have lost anyway. So by virtue of the poor decisions they've made, they've got worse. If you're trying to read these as characters, of course you're not. This is booking decisions that are being made and bad ones at that. But that's why you take the piss out of these terrible characters. And speaking of terrible characters, Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen, Briggs Joshson, whatever, as rough, tough cowboy fighters in the bar, just half-baked, one-note joke gimmicks, entering in matches that are either boring or bad or a combination of the two. Like, the worst-case scenario was them finally getting out of winning ways. Maybe we're leaving the dusty trail behind and we're going all the way to the top of 2.0. Like, it just... Surely these were designed to be losers so that they would step away from this and they would find who they actually are. But no, it appears as if they've, like, paid their dues and they're going to become gunslingers around here. Like, just, I don't want these characters to improve because they're two of the worst of the bunch. And it's not on Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen. It rarely is when we criticise the stuff on the show. It's rarely on the wrestlers. This wasn't a particularly great match, but this is not a criticism isolated to the wrestlers. Just a lousy gimmick. It's lousy stuff. And the Grizzled Young Vets were not the act to sacrifice to it. Piss poor.
Right, main event time. North American Championship on the line. Triple threat. Carmelo Hayes versus Putin and Johnny Gargano. As you would expect with three guys in this, this was one of the best matches on the show. Yes, there was a lot of the usual, right, one of you go down and we'll do our spots together and maybe we'll do a few three-man spots in there. But regardless, I enjoyed it nonetheless. Pete Dunne did a half crab on both of them. Trick Williams constantly interfering, dragging Carmelo Hayes out of there. Hayes fights back. He does a springboard body block on Pete Dunne and starts battering Johnny Gargano. But Gargano fights out of the corner and hits that bulldog running clothesline combo on both of them. And he dives onto Dunne and Hayes, setting up a running hurricane to Pete Dunne as we head towards the break. Hayes looks like he's in control, sends Gargano to the apron, but Gargano fights back and hits a slingshot spear. Gargano is caught and what looks like the bitter end, he reverses it into a DDT for a near fall. They hit stereo kicks to Hayes, but he's back up and he suplexes Dunne onto Gargano and goes for a pinfall on there. Gargano runs them both over, then lawn darts Hayes. Dunne, though, suddenly grabs Gargano, hits him with the bitter end. He's got the match won. He's won the title. 1-2. Tony D'Angelo's there. Your feelings. Your hopes and dreams. He drags Pete Dunne out of the ring, breaks up the pinfall, hoys him into the steps. And Carmelo Hayes is recovered to hit that guillotine leg drop on Johnny Gargano. 1-2-3. He retains the title, but it was all about what happened post-match as well. In comes LA Knight and Grayson Waller. They're still brawling. In the midst of all this, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams not only have celebrated, but have decided to do exactly what they did to Dexter Lumis, to Johnny Gargano. He puts his hand in a chair. But then Tommaso Ciampa's music hits. He comes out bringing a chair of his own and saves his former DIY teammate, swinging a chair, helping the babyfaces clear the ring. The babyfaces being, I'm not mistaken, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, LA Knight. Old school NXT through and through, LA Knight and Pete Dunne. There's a nice moment with Gargano and Ciampa. And I'm sat there going, wait a second. So you've got those guys, that's four people. And I'm looking going, I love you, Trick Williams, but he ain't putting you on the War Games team. But you've got Carmelo Hayes, you have got Grayson Waller, you've got Tony D'Angelo, but you need a fourth name. And then the music hits. Out comes Ron Breaker to scream War Games, and they pile in and the announcers scream about new school versus old school. We've got another match added to that War Games pay-per-view. Your thoughts on Tony D'Angelo screwing Pete Dunne and this massive War Game development as well, Hamflet?
I spotted your sarcasm obscured by your typically brilliant review and recap of the match there about who the baby faces are, who the heels are, and how we're supposed to unpick all of this. The broad brushstrokes from the opening bell to the closing trademark graphic of this were decent. I didn't love the match, but it was a good main event. I'll never watch it again. I'll never remember sort of one key moment from it, unless maybe Tony D'Angelo pulling the leg out at the end. But like nothing happened in it that gave you that any of that sort of feeling that Carmelo Hayes has done in the past, where he's had those types of breakout, for want of a better phrase. That was the big thing in NXT, wasn't it? But those breakout moments, this didn't have that, which I guess could be seen as a bit of a disappointment when you're in there with Pete Dunne and Johnny Gargano. But it was good. Like Carmelo Hayes doesn't look like he's like first day out of training school, like a lot of the wrestlers do. He never has done. Like one of the reasons I think we all enjoy him and Trick Williams so much is because they just feel like they're naturals at this. They're one of the few acts that were just delivered to us box fresh, like new shoes on episode one of 2.0. And they actually felt like they'd been together more than 5 minutes, which the same couldn't be said for all these other Insta characters. That came across in the match. The union between the NXT old school, I would like to think, is fragile by design. As you have pointed out there, LA Knight is not some sort of black and gold lifer. I think this is right. Yeah, he never wrestled once in Full Sail.
Mm-hmm.
They were permanently out of Full Sail before LA Knight even arrived. So you were right to pick up on that. Pete Dunne and LA Knight weren't, or I guess they are now, default baby faces before tonight. So, you know, I don't know if you spotted this, but Tommaso Ciampa picked up Johnny Gargano quite slowly and by the hand. You might not pick this up. I think you alluded to it in your recap. They used to be tag partners. There was a match once upon a time called One Final Beat. And if you didn't kill yourself before it finished, you'll remember a spot where there was some stroking of the hand that unified that there was once a bond that had been severed forever. And as Ciampa picked up Gargano, I think, and I know I'm accused of going too deep sometimes, Wilborn, I think there might have been drawing some comparisons to a past between those two. Little breadcrumbs, you might say. Not something that was completely obvious and on the nose, just breadcrumbs. So I think the fragility of the old school team is by design, right? I think that this idea that the new school are here to take over and they're not gonna be polite and they're not gonna wait the turn, they're just gonna have this spot and they're gonna have this night and they're gonna do it at War Games, they're gonna do it in this big, brutal taking of the throne, as it were. You know, they haven't been able, Bron Breakker hasn't been able to take Tommaso Ciampa's title yet, but this is a way in which they can take something on the night, and then ultimately Ciampa's days are numbered. It's not bad. It's not Bron Breakker mixing in with these douchebags is just one of them things that happens in 2.0. I know he lost to Ciampa, and I know he said, look, I'm going to get you next time, but he's not turned heel, and yet he's just hanging out with these assholes, you know, like he's just accepted his lot because he thought, well, they'll do. They'll do to help me make my point at War Games, which is that I don't have any respect for the old guard. It's all right, this, isn't it? I think we'd be performative to call it good. It'd feel too generous to say that this match is going to be awesome. But I think there are several interesting combinations of wrestlers that will certainly try. I think the old guard versus the new crop is the way this had to go, because the gulf was too pronounced. Like, they had to do that. They had to tell the story in 2.0. You couldn't just have straight up heels and straight up baby faces because it was too ridiculous. It's like, oh, you've got these people that kind of look like they don't belong here anymore. Ciampa and Gargano and the like. And then you've got these people that have just been invented one week. these human beings that didn't exist. And then suddenly, 7 days later, NXT gets a new coloured building and suddenly they do exist. So you did kind of have to do this to sort of formalize what you've been trying to do. And that's to go right the way back to what we said at the start of this podcast. That's what I quite like. I think it is time to draw a thick neon line between old and new. Mm-hmm. And it's going to happen at War Games when I fully expect the younger, the newer guys to prevail. I fully expect these fresh characters to prevail over the old guard. I fully expect, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed for Johnny Gargano taking a pin, because I want that to represent something else entirely. Mm-hmm. And yes, then Bron Breakker has a new claim to stake against Ciampa that justifies his rematch, and we get to probably where we need to go.
And I know what you're thinking, Amphlett. Yeah, it's all well and good pitching that, and we know Gargano's hopefully heading out the door towards AEW, but even so, you look at that and the fragility of that team and go, I've got LA Knight, Pete Dunne, Gargano and Ciampa together. How on earth are you going to present these guys as talented as Carmelo Hayes is and as huge as Bron Breakker is? I'll tell you how. Never mind all this bollocks about who's going to get the advantage. I could not care less about that next week, because I know what's going to happen at War Games, and that is, at one point, they're going to have the baby faces are going to be coming out of their cage or whatever it is. But who have the heels got on their team? Tony D'Angelo, who's quite good at picking a certain lock. So all four of them, are they going to hit the War Games ring? And that's how they're going to do it, because they're going to have the numbers advantage for the longest period of time. So by the time that the other two or three people eventually get in, as much as they will be fresh, one of the guys, Johnny Gargano, will be beating the down, and then he can eat the pin easily, and it sort of excuses everything else.
My Aunt Meadow, she used to design the finest padlocks this side of the New Jersey shore. We got this place on lockdown. Exactly. The D'Angelo family had this place on lockdown for generations.
If that happens, I will pop more than I did when Dakota Kai turned on Tegan Knox, and that was me leaping out of my sofa and texting you guys, that's how you do a fucking turn.
Yeah, I won't, because I was in the building and I lost my goddamn mind.
Well, anyway, let us know your thoughts on everything that went down on War Games and on the last night's episode of NXT 2.0 on Twitter, at What Culture WWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Not enough egg on the show for me, at Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. You can wish Michael Sidgwick well in his recovery at M. Sidgwick. And you can buy his book at whatculture.bigcartel.com. But for now, this has been the NXT 2.0 preview. We'll be back later on today with the... that was the NXT 2.0 review. We'll be back with the preview of AEW Dynamite later on today. What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from. But for now, my thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.